I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 7:15. It's going to be warm and sunny throughout the weekend and dry like it has been. No change there, but a big game. Tim and I were talking about this. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. This is probably the big game of the weekend in college football with the highest-ranked opponents taking on each other. And then Texas A&M LSU.
Yeah, this is the biggest game of the weekend, Tommy. Good morning.
Good morning.
And who would have thought at the beginning of the season that these two teams, when they would meet here in late October, it would be the marquee game, especially considering what happened in the season opener. I mean, Texas A&M didn't look very good, losing at home to Notre Dame, and we all know what happened with LSU losing to USC.
Tim brought up, we were talking about it's a college football fight song Friday here. I'm playing fight songs, and I played the Navy fight song because Navy and Army both in the top 25. And I was, Tim was talking about them playing Notre Dame earlier in the day, Navy playing Notre Dame. And the only thing I'm concerned with the Notre Dame-Navy game is if Navy wins, I might be just laughing too much to enjoy the LSU game.
Why would you be laughing too much?
Because Notre Dame lost to Navy, that's all. And I'm not a big Notre Dame fan, but that's just me, you know. Let's talk about the Texas A&M Aggies. What do they bring to the field?
Well, they got a very strong running attack, led by Le'Veon Moss, who played his high school football right here in Baton Rouge. He was a star at Estruma, who ended up he originally committed to Alabama and now obviously went and signed with Texas A&M. And he's second in the SEC in rushing, and they lean on him quite a bit. Connor Wegman is their starting quarterback. Wegman is a guy that was highly recruited out of the state of Texas. He just hasn't really put it together just yet, Tommy. I mean, I think that's the thing with him. He's had some injuries. He had a foot injury that limited him to just four games last year. He had a shoulder injury this year, forced him to miss three games. And so they've been kind of waiting over there in Texas A&M for his coming out party. He had a good performance against Missouri, but last week against Mississippi State, he threw a couple of interceptions, and it was on passes that he wasn't really being pressured on. And so the talent's there. I don't know if the injuries have slowed the development or what, or maybe they just don't have enough talented wide receivers. I mean, when you look at their group of receivers, it's not that impressive. So they've really just been a team that's really relied on the ground game. They're going to run it a lot more than they're going to throw it. And then on the defensive side, they got some really good players, especially along the defensive line. They got a couple of kids that will likely be a first-round draft, or could be first-round draft picks, I should say. So that will be something that they're going to have to certainly a lot of people are looking at the matchup here between LSU's offensive line, which we know is so good, going up against this Texas A&M defensive line. So that's going to be a lot of fun to see how that all shakes out here, because you got some really good players. Even their head football coach, Mike Elko, called it something like the $10 million matchup, because he just got first rounders with Will Campbell for LSU and Emory Jones going up against the likes of Nick Scroton and Shamar Stewart for Texas A&M. Torin York is kind of like their Whit Weeks at linebacker. He's been really good as a sophomore. And they got a kid in the defensive secondary that has three interceptions on the year, and so Marcus Ratcliffe. So a lot of people expecting this game kind of to be played in the 20s or so, and it should be a really tight football game throughout.
Le'Veon Moss is their bell cow.
Oh, for sure, for sure. No doubt about it. I mean, he's rushed for 100 yards or more in three of his four SEC games this season. I had a really big game against Missouri. That's really the highlight game for Texas A&M this year. Missouri came into that contest ranked number 9 in the country, and the Aggies, they blew the doors off on the Tigers. They won that game 41-10, but I think as we've seen through the season, I don't really know how good Missouri is. They have not looked all that great, barely got past Auburn this past weekend. But still, that was a game at 11 a.m. A&M was ready for it, and Missouri just they got walloped in that game. They couldn't get off the mat.
First year for Elko, right, head coach?
Yeah, Mike Elko, and there's obviously a connection between him and Brian Kelly. Elko was on Brian Kelly's staff in 2017. He was actually Brian Kelly's defensive coordinator that season. They went 10-3 that year. They beat LSU in the Citrus Bowl. After that, he got the job as the defensive coordinator at Texas A&M. He was there for 4 years. Got his first head coaching job in 2022 with Duke. And we all know Duke's not a powerhouse when it comes to playing football, but he was named ACC Coach of the Year in 2022 as the Blue Devils went 9-4 that year. And then the following year, they went 7-5. Obviously, when A&M let go of Jimbo Fisher, they were looking for a head coach. I don't think Mike Elko was their first choice, but there was a level of comfort there in Mike Elko and the fact that he was at Texas A&M before as a defensive coordinator. And they look at him as a 47-year-old guy who's an up-and-comer. And, so far, you can't, other than that first game against Notre Dame, which was just a real dud for them, they've looked really good this season winning their games. I mean, I think they have benefited a little bit playing the lower-tier teams in the Southeastern Conference. I mean, they beat Florida. They beat Mississippi State. Those teams are not all that good. They beat Arkansas, and Arkansas is probably, you can label them, a mediocre team. So they haven't gone up against the best. This is going to be their best foe that they've faced so far in the Southeastern Conference. And I think LSU's been tested a little bit more in the fact that they had to go on the road and play a tough South Carolina team and then obviously winning that big game at home against Ole Miss.
I was talking about laughing about Notre Dame. I'll tell you who's laughing is Jimbo Fisher. He's still laughing. Wherever he is.
He's got a lot of money to laugh with.
Yes, he does. Yeah. 7:21. Yeah. More when we come back with Jeff Palermo. Questions, comments about the LSU game. We'll talk about the LSU offense when we come back. Right now, 7:21, traffic.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Be well. All right, 7:26 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. Let's talk about LSU's offense, health of the receivers.
Yeah, good question. Maybe, just maybe, fingers crossed here, Tommy, that we might see Chris Hilton for the first time this season. Brian Kelly told reporters yesterday he was a full go at practice yesterday. He had suffered a leg injury all the way back in preseason camp, and for a while now, he's been listed as basically week to week and listed as questionable going into every game. But Brian Kelly really sounded pretty optimistic yesterday that he may play. He talked about the fact that right now it's mainly a conditioning thing that he's trying to work up on that conditioning, being a wide receiver. So it doesn't seem like the pain or the injury itself is holding him back. If he feels good to go out there and I don't know, get to a dozen to 20 snaps tomorrow, I think we'll finally see him. And that's big because he's the one guy that can really stretch the defense. They've been missing that this season. We've talked about it several times so far this year, Tommy, that they've really needed to have a guy that can kind of stretch the field. And he's their speed burner, so they can certainly use him. And then it was great to get C.J. Daniels back last week. He was so instrumental in that game against Arkansas, and everybody else seems to be pretty healthy. So the one piece that they've been kind of missing on offense, they may finally get against Texas A&M.
Do you remember Kyron Lacy getting nicked up a little bit or not from last week?
Well, remember in the Ole Miss game, it looked like he suffered a really bad injury at one point, and the training staff had to come out there and look at him, and then a few plays later, he was back out on the field and, of course, had the winning touchdown catch. So. But it looked bad there when he had kind of an awkward fall to the ground in Lacy, and you were fearing the worst. But somehow he avoided a major injury there, and he's been fine. He's been fine.
You know, we talk about the speed of Caden Durham, but he really does, for a guy that's 5'9", talk about run behind his pads and run with power. Talk about that for a little bit, if you would, Jeff.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he has been, you know, we talked about it at the start. Who would have thought that LSU and Texas A&M would be the marquee matchup of the college football slate on this October Saturday? And who would have thought that a guy like Caden Durham was going to be the main guy for LSU as far as their rushing attack? And he certainly looked a lot more healthy last week. Remember, he had the dislocated toes.
He looked completely different to me. That, to me, looked like a healthy Caden Durham. You?
But Oh, yeah. But this kid's a track star. We believe he's going to be competing on the LSU track team. And he's got the speed, but he does run so low and he runs so powerful that he's able to break tackles. We saw that in the South Carolina game. He's also got some moves to him as well. He can make some people miss. He has been such a huge addition to this team. I don't know really where they would be without him. They probably would have a couple losses if they didn't have Caden Durham.
Tredez Green, 6'7". You know, I like that the arm span on that guy. Man, I'd like to see him go against these Texas A&M corners. Let Garrett Nussmeier throw up one of them balls real high in the air, you know?
Well, we saw a lot of them last week. We'll see if maybe he gets his snap count reduced if Chris Hilton is out there. But I know Brian Kelly and Joan Sloan, the offensive coordinator, they're trying to figure out ways to get him the ball. So I think he will be a part of the offensive attack for the Tigers tomorrow night.
Real quick, we're a minute late. How do you see it playing out?
Man, I see this one being very, very close. I think if home field advantage for Texas A&M is big in this game, LSU's got to avoid those pre-snap penalties that they saw against Arkansas.
Yeah.
But, I got to be honest with you, Tommy. I've been kind of twisting and turning here. I'll have my preview piece up at WWL.com, and I'll have my official prediction there. How about that?
We'll look for it. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time. Minute late time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. It is Friday morning, 7:45, quarter till 8, round these parts, about these times. We help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. If you can, safely, not while you're driving or anything, go to jeffersonfinancial.org. You look in the middle of the page, you see manage your money plan for your future with our financial calculators. You can click on that. It's absolutely free. No data will be stored. Nobody's going to contact you or anything like that. But they got a lot of calculators, some of which Mark's going to refer to here, that might help you out and help you manage your money. And that's what Mark's going to do right now. How you doing, Mark?
Good morning, sir, and happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you as well. What are we talking about
Absolutely.
Today? What are we managing?
Tell you that we have had mortgage rates that have risen for the fourth straight week. And many say they're headed towards 7%. I had somebody from the station contact me earlier this week, and they said, you know what, we hit a low point after our conversations. The person in question was looking into rates because they were from out of town. They moved here. They're looking to buy a home, and they hit it just right. They got a 30-year loan, fixed rate for 5%, and it's like that came and went. That's gone. And, you know, Tom, we've had downbeat economic narrative that have been overshadowed by stronger economic data. Because you and I have talked about True Hardware, they just filed for bankruptcy, Walgreens closing stores, CVS is closing stores, Rite Aid is emerging from bankruptcy, they filed last year. The number of layoffs that have come out, the looming commercial loan crisis that I think is just in its infancy. It's going to keep unfolding. And here the Fed Fed knows all those things, if we know those. And it's the employment report came in better than expected. Retail sales seem to come in better than expected. People are getting raises because the companies have to be competitive with keeping up with inflation and so on. So it's like the economy keeps signaling that it's stronger than a lot of the narrative would suggest that it is. So what it's like, who cares? Well, I'm glad the economy's stronger, but what we really need in the economy is to turn around this anomaly where the rates are, where the Fed put them in their effort to fight inflation. And we still have short-term rates that are higher than some of the intermediate-term rates. And it just makes a mess out of financial markets. And we're seeing that unfold. And we're going back to where I started here, that the mortgage rates now have risen for the fourth straight week. So we had a 5-point I'm going to say 5.X. I think it was 5.7% rate just last month. And now it's moved to the sixes because the market has moved and Fannie Mae has moved. And they, a lot of financial institutions, especially for mortgage stuff, they have to price off of some of the information that comes out of Fannie Mae. And it's, you know, it put the Fed on pause. And we've been talking about this since last year, last October, when Powell came out saying, oh, you know what, next year is the time. It's about time we start lowering rates, because they've certainly raised rates over the past couple of years. So at the beginning of the year, I remember the forecast, we're going to have 11, you know, there was one, it might have been Goldman Sachs, it was one of the main money center banks, I thought it was looking at, we're going to have 11 interest rate reductions in 2024 that was supposed to begin in March. I know we've reported on this before, but in case some of our listeners didn't hear that news, and none of that happened. It kept getting kicked down the road. Well, the financial institutions and financial markets were anticipating some of those rate reductions. So, you know, a lot of them, including us at Jefferson Financial, we lowered our rates to match or to, I guess, be a front runner and provide our members with more better than competitive rates. And when the Fed says, you know what, we're looking at other data that might suggest that we slow down. In fact, one of the Fed governors came out this past week saying, let's not be too hasty. We don't have to lower rates anymore. Well, maybe we need to sit and wait some more and see what other economic data comes out. So they're even in conflict. They, the people that sit on the Federal Reserve Board, the Open Market Committee, the group of people that decide on the direction of rates and the money supply. So they're saying, well, you know, we just lowered by 50 basis points, a 0.5%. And they were supposed to, or at least it was for, when I say that, that's bad language. It was forecasted that they were going to have another 50% rate drop, and then yet another, at least 25 by the end of the year. So I'm looking at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. They have a Fed Watch tool, and the Fed meets in about 13 days. And 95% of the participants there are believing that we'll get a 25 basis point reduction in rates at their next meeting. It's right after the election. And it may all everybody's guesses be right, but this might be dead wrong by the time we get there, depending on what other news comes out. And of course, the election is going to be right in the midst of all this. So the Fed is supposed to be separate from that. But, you know, it depends on what comes out and political promises and who wins. And they'll be meeting like just a couple of days after that. So where I'm going back to is if you miss the absolute low that were 5%, if you're waiting for that other basis point, the market is to drop. The market has moved away from you. And another statistic that came out this week, sales of previously owned homes, because of what's going on of late within the past month, the sales the slowest rate in sales of 14 years. So it's hit the market, and it's hitting the big ticket market, which is housing, and expensive items for long periods of time. Rates 30-year last year were about 7.79, and today they're 6.44. A big difference there. Glad they have fallen that much, but they've risen about a point in the past month since they were in the five. So another study came out, CoreLogic put together some statistics, and for Louisiana, we have one of four states that it's cheaper to buy than rent, so says CoreLogic. And then I wanted to segue over, Tommy, that's a complicated thing that a lot of people would find very difficult to really wade themselves through it. Should I rent or buy? Well, it can be complicated. All the things that go into home ownership versus you feeling like I'm renting from somebody, I'm not building equity, my money is just going to the landlord, and I walk out like I came in. I'm not carrying any equity with me or any plus side on their income statement or on their own balance sheet. So we have Jefferson Financial has mortgage calculators and many of them, and one is rent versus buy. So if you get confused about all the variables that may be involved, that will at least get you through it for those that are interested. Maybe some of us are renting right now. We're seeing where the rates have gone. We've gotten a little bit discouraged by, well, I maybe missed the bottom, but is it still a decent time to do this? I know a friend of mine that's in Florida. That Florida is not one of those four states. Florida is one of the states where it's cheaper to rent because things their economy is different than ours, and is more activity there than it seems to be here. But that would be a place for people to go to help them walk through these big decisions in life.
So if you go to jeffersonfinancial.org, which I just did and clicked on a tab, you see first off, you start at the home page, which is plan for your future with our financial calculators. Then from there, it'll take you to mortgage calculators. Under that, you see rent versus buy. You click on that, and that is a very handy tool where you can plug in your numbers. Again, Mark, you can't break the computer. Nobody's going to call you or anything like that. Absolutely free.
You don't have to log in.
Don't have to log in, no password, none of that stuff, anything like that.
None of that stuff.
But it is a very valuable tool because that can be terribly confusing as to whether it's cheaper to rent or buy.
It is, and it gets, you know, to buy, people are typically, the common complaint is, well, look, it's not, you need to come to the closing table with money. I need some cash to get there. We will do financing up to 97%. A lot of lenders say, no, we're stopping at 80%. To bring 20% cash of a home price to the table is not what everybody can do. So if some of the lenders will loan more than 80% in the 90s, okay, that helps. So that's part of where, you know, the calculator comes in to say, I don't have to bring as much to the closing, but what will it mean to my payment and how does that compare to the alternative? I'm not going to buy at all. I'm just going to stay renting. And that helps you walk through that because doing it on your own and you're going to get the napkin out and try to figure it out, I think is going to be more than frustrating.
Yeah, especially
that's
if it's
what you need. You need
especially if it's a cocktail napkin. Thank you, Mark.
Will you see?
Valuable information. We'll talk to you Monday as we take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Mark Roser, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Go to jeffersonfinancial.org, 755.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.